In obedience to law, which requires that we give equal treatment to all candidates for a political office, we now present a broadcast sponsored by the National Election Campaign Committee of the Communist Party, a campaign talk by Earl Browder, communist candidate for the presidency of the United States. Mr. Browder will be introduced by Miss Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, candidate for Congresswoman at Large in New York State. Miss Flynn.
This is one of a series of nationwide broadcasts over the three major networks by the communist candidates for President and Vice President of the United States. The speaker tonight is Earl Browder, General Secretary of the Communist Party and its candidate for President. As a communist woman, it is my privilege to introduce the fearless and outspoken standard bearer of the Communist Party, the only candidate who stands squarely for peace, which is the major political issue for the women of our country today. I present the communist candidate for President of the United States, Earl Browder.
Friends and fellow Americans, foreign policy is a matter which deals with all the problems of war and peace. Our country is preoccupied today with the question of war. Yet there is almost complete absence of any serious discussion of foreign policy. In Congress, wildly hysterical military appropriations are passed, one after another, that now mount up to $15 billion, two-thirds of which no responsible person had the slightest idea was needed 4 months ago. One and all, the leaders and ideologists of the Democratic and Republican parties alike forget one little thing. They forget that armaments and soldiers are nothing but instruments of foreign policy, that by themselves they answer no question whatever, that without an intelligent foreign policy, armaments only multiply confusion and danger, that with a wrong-headed and dangerous foreign policy, armaments only rush our country more quickly and deeply into disaster. I speak against this madness of armaments. I would use the fortunate circumstance that we are in the midst of national elections, that public discussion is not yet under the ban, but only under serious attack, to put forward a serious examination of foreign policy. First of all, glance at various European countries which have been conquered by the Nazi invaders during the past year. Seriously ask yourself the question, were they destroyed by lack of armaments or by a foreign policy which went contrary to their national interests? The outstanding example is that of France. There was the classical land of military preparedness. Ever since the last war, it had bankrupted itself with armaments, fortifications, and militarization. Only 7 years ago, it was the undisputed mistress of the whole continent of Europe west of the Soviet border. After Hitler's rearmament of Germany, France even obtained a mutual defense pact with the Soviet Union. France was in an unconquerable position. But following a disastrous foreign policy, the French government itself destroyed its own defenses one by one. It helped Hitler and Mussolini destroy the Spanish Republic. It betrayed Ethiopia. It sold out its ally, Czechoslovakia, at Munich. It tore up its mutual defense pact with the Soviet Union. When finally, at the bidding of Britain, the French government declared war against Germany, it had already, by its own foreign policy, placed itself in the most disadvantageous position. And after it declared war, it made war not against Germany, but against its own people, outlawing the French Communist Party and crushing the labor movement. Its enormous military machine was never even mobilized for action against the invaders. Most of its tanks were captured by Hitler, not at the front, but in the interior of France, where they had been kept for use against the French workers. Of what use were armaments to France when it followed such a foreign policy? Turn now for a look at the foreign policy of Great Britain. Here is to be found the source and fountainhead of most of the disasters of Europe and Asia and Africa, which have now climaxed with a month of daily air bombardments of London itself, and the horrible irony of British retaliation striking chiefly upon the quivering body of her ally of a few months ago, France. British foreign policy deliberately brought Hitler into power in Germany and gave the chief, the indispensable, help for the German armaments that now strike at the British Isles. It was British foreign policy which deliberately scuttled the League of Nations, which abandoned China to the Japanese invaders, which determined the betrayal of Ethiopia, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Spain, which pressed France into tearing up its pact with the Soviet Union, which then pushed Poland, Norway, Holland, and Belgium into a disastrous and hopeless war in which they quickly fell victims, which tried to create a desperate diversion in Finland, which led France to her collapse, which is now involving the United States in the general ruination. Of what use are armaments when they are in the service of such a foreign policy as that of Great Britain? There were two central thoughts dominating this British foreign policy. First, a Hitlerized Germany was to be encouraged and pushed into a war to destroy the Soviet Union, which would at the same time so weaken Germany as to remove her as a threat to Britain. Second, Britain's imperialist rivals were to be subordinated and made dependent upon Britain, in the case of France by the German threat, in the case of the United States by the threat of Japan, with perhaps warlike developments in each case, in which Britain would act as the impartial judge and peacemaker. Thus would the blessings of the British Empire be spread over the face of the earth. This super clever foreign policy of Britain came to wreck on the rock of the Soviet Union. First, the Soviet Union had grown too strong and too consolidated to offer a tempting field for military adventures for a Hitler who likes to have his victories assured before he goes into action. Second, the leadership of the Soviet Union was too wise and experienced to fall into the British trap. Now, in the light of this analysis of British policy, turn to an examination of the foreign policy of the United States during the past 10 years of world crisis. At every major point, American policy is found to be either an adaptation or an outright copy of the British model. It has no promise for our country any better than that which it has already realized for the British. This policy is the common property of Roosevelt and Wilkie, of the Democratic and Republican parties, of nearly the whole American bourgeoisie. Only the Communist Party has proposed and consistently fought for a foreign policy for our country, which could replace the disastrous policy now being followed. A clear-sighted and long-range foreign policy for the United States can only be developed upon the solid foundation of friendship and close collaboration between our country, China, and the Soviet Union. That is now blocked by our shameful betrayal of China through our supply to Japan over the years of the materials for her war of conquest, and by Washington's studied and artificial hostility toward the Soviet Union. Only when these features of our present foreign policy are wiped out can we begin to move toward a foreign policy which can guarantee peace and security to America. Such a constellation of powers, the United States, China, and the Soviet Union, moving along agreed-upon lines fully consistent with the needs of the three great peoples, would be very powerful indeed. It would be a stable combination, for these countries have no rivalries or conflicting interests. It would be strategically powerful, because it would immediately hold the keys to three continents, Washington, Moscow, Chongqing axis, solidly welded with correct policies, would be unmatchable in world politics. It would be physically strong, combining 700 to 800 millions of population and the preponderance of the world's productive forces. It would be morally invincible, attracting the enthusiastic adherence of the suffering peoples all over the globe. Some glimmerings of the bright light such a policy would bring to America and to the world shine through the remarks made in the House of Representatives in Washington by Congressman Sabbath of Illinois on October 1st. He said, I quote, "It is realized now in many quarters that Great Britain made a serious, if not well-nigh fatal mistake by not concluding and cementing friendly relations with Russia ahead of Germany. Should we repeat that error, regardless of what the Nazi, fascist, or capitalistic groups in the United States may say about Russia, I reiterate that the best interests of the United States will be served not by criticizing and assailing Russia, but by taking just the opposite course and seeking her friendly cooperation. The latter course will inure to the benefit of America, and it is the welfare and safety of America that in these critical days should be our sole objective." End of quotation. Those remarks contain a profound wisdom which Americans, regardless of their opinions about socialism, would do well to ponder. A word of warning is, however, in place at this point. It will be worse than useless for the United States to approach the Soviet Union in the hopes of finding an ally in a war, the aims of which are to redistribute the colonies and subject peoples among the great powers. The Soviet Union will never participate in such a war. It will be equally futile and harmful for the United States to indulge in such tricky maneuverings as Chamberlain carried on in Moscow from June to August last year. And it will not be conducive to success of any attempt at rapprochement with the Soviet Union if it is conducted by a government which is stamping out democracy at home and establishing an American version of Hitlerism. I am no spokesman for the Soviet Union and can make no promises on her behalf. I am the spokesman for a growing body of American workers and farmers who see friendship and collaboration with the Soviet Union and China as the prerequisite for a sound foreign policy for our country. We would wish to join our efforts with all those of like mind to lead our country along such a road as would make that not only possible, but inevitable. Only along such a road of foreign policy for America can our country win through for itself and for the world out of the present dangers and bloody chaos into a new world of peace, order, and well-being for all peoples in all lands.
Anyone desiring a copy of the speech you have just heard and a copy of the National Election Platform, write to Mr. Earl Browder, 35 East 12th Street, New York City. I repeat, Mr. Earl Browder, 35 East 12th Street, New York City.
In obedience to law which requires that we give equal treatment to all candidates for a political office, we have presented a broadcast sponsored by the National Election Campaign Committee for the Communist Party, a campaign talk by Earl Browder. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.